Of all of our longtime subscribers on this podcast, I don't think Amy Acker is one of them.
Oh, so sad.
As much as I'd love to believe that.
So sad. Hey everybody, welcome to episode 232 of the Rated NA podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. I'm your host Ash.
And I'm Scott.
And we are down a Matt today. He has had a bit of a family emergency, so we're sending him lots of love.
Absolutely.
And we're going to just, you know, Scott and I are going to do this bad boy. We're going to do it together.
What? Whoa. What are we doing?
Do it just you and I together. Well, alone.
Just the two of us, huh?
Yeah, just the two of us.
All right.
Whisper sweet somethings into your ears, sir.
Okay, well, let's forge on and see what we can do.
Yeah. Well, we have a special episode today that is brought to you by Loot Crate. And Loot Crate is the monthly subscription service where you get a box full of great stuff delivered to your house each and every month. And every month is different. We just got the intel on what Maze Crate is. And Maze Crate is power. And it's going to have stuff from Dragon Ball Z, World of Warcraft, and Marvel Comics, probably something from Captain America. And if you go to lootcrate.com/ratedNA and use the code ratedNA, you get 10% off your subscription, and you help out our show, which is freaking great.
Yep, we appreciate that. This is a labor of love, but anything that helps us keep the lights on is greatly appreciated.
Yeah, and Loot Crate's great. last month, they had a crate with some stuff from Labyrinth and Vikings, and every month I get surprised by what's in it. So I definitely say subscribe, give it a shot. You know, let us know what you think. And there's generally at least a handful of things in every single crate that are pretty damn awesome. So and once again, yeah.
It's just ahead. A ton of fun to get like a mystery box in the mail and open it up.
Really
and
go is.
Like, whoa.
It's, everybody loves getting good mail, like not crap mail, but good mail. And Loot Crate's got some good mail.
Yeah. Imagine going to your mailbox and instead of getting like a red plum, you get a box of nerdy stuff and it's all right. Super cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So check it out. Lootcrate.com/ratedNA, code ratedNA. About the show.
Let's do the rundown.
This week we're going to talk about MegaCon, which is a comic convention that is in Orlando here. We'll have news about some a game from the Doom co-creators, The Punisher, and the future of Battlefield, which is timely. And then in the reviews, we'll talk a little bit about the Gears of War 4 and Mirror's Edge betas. And then we have an Aquato this week, which is which two franchises or IPs would you love to see crossover? Tell us. I have an answer to this question as well.
I don't yet, but hopefully I think of one by the time we get
you,
there.
Oh, you certainly will.
Yeah, I probably will.
So let's see. Who should we... Oh, Ash.
Yeah.
What's going on, man?
It's easy to toss to me, if you know what I mean.
Whoa.
yeah, so I've had a pretty busy week. My wife is about to go into labor like any moment now, so we've actually had like a week off together, so I've actually had time to hang out and do some stuff around the house.
It's amazing we're even here right now.
It is. We kind of like when we were planning this episode, I was like, oh man, like we should probably do this before I go to the hospital. If I try and podcast from the birthing suite, I think that's probably a bad idea.
Yeah, you'd probably get in trouble for that.
Yeah.
And I mean, we're pushing the limit, right? We're like, oh, dual state. Let's hope that goes well. And then here we are today. It's like, okay, yeah, let's hope we get through this one.
Yeah, so we did. We recorded an episode with Jewel State, which was a bucket list thing for me. I've been a fan of hers for ages and ages. And we had her on. Well, we had her for a print interview, I think the first year we were a website. So
yes.
Back in 2010, 2011. And I've been trying really to kind of get her to come on and talk since that time. So definitely go back and listen to episode 231. And Jewel's on there for a bit talking about her upcoming projects. And she was great. And we recorded that less than a week ago. And then what else have I been doing? Oh, I played the Gears of War 4 beta quite a bit. So I'll talk about that in the reviews section.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a fan of Gears of War, you'll probably like it. But I don't want to spoil too much yet. We talked about Matt was going back and watching all the X-Men films in order. And he mentioned X-Men Days of Future Past, the Rogue Cut.
I think I mentioned the Rogue Cut.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, okay, I asked him if he saw it.
It's on HBO now.
Oh.
And I picked up HBO for Game of Thrones,
mm-hmm,
you know, because that's what I always do. I pick it up while Game of Thrones is on.
I think a lot of people do that.
Right. So I watched Rogue Cut, and still not a great movie.
No.
I mean, I hate to be a negative. It's not a bad movie by any means, but I think it kind of – it doesn't have that – it's another one of those movies where none of the characters really like each other all that much.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things I think that the Marvel films really do well, the, you know, Marvel Cinematic Universe films, is the characters have a great rapport with one another. And even if they don't necessarily get along, you can still tell that they're teammates and they care for one another. I didn't really get that feeling from X-Men Days of Future Past Road Cut, which, you know, it's kind of a bummer.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's like even
each other's throats and
yeah. Even yeah. if you did like that movie, I just felt like the overall tone of the film was so dark and there was so much like despair in the film that I just found it hard to watch.
Right. Right. I did like the added stuff, the Rogue cut stuff. So it actually adds Rogue to the film.
Right. Did it make any more sense with her in it?
A little bit, you know, there's a scene and I'm going to spoil a little bit of it. So spoiler alert, but, there's a scene where Kitty gets cut by Wolverine's claws when she's sending him back to the past. And she, you know, she has a harder time kind of holding on to him and maintaining that leak.
Yes.
In the Rogue cut, they're like, well, she's going to bleed out. So we need to get Rogue to absorb her powers, and then Rogue can do the same thing that Kitty's doing. And so they do a jailbreak, and they break Rogue out of prison, and then Rogue's in the rest of the movie. So it actually was a sizable, you know, Anna Paquin got cut out quite a bit. So.
Wait, so is it like an alternate timeline where they take Ellen Page out and they put Rogue in instead?
Well, Ellen Page is still in. She just kind of sits off to the side, like kind of whimpering and bleeding. But Anna Paquin's in that final room, and also Bobby Drake. Spoiler alert again, Bobby Drake, Iceman, dies during the Rogue prison break. So he's not in the room when the sentence break in. So
I thought this was just like deleted scenes they added back to the film. This makes it sound like it's a totally different film almost.
Yeah, it's a very different cut. Like the majority of the things happen in the same order. It's, I think, 15 to 20 minutes longer, which you may love and you may hate.
yeah.
Because there's a lot more exposition. There's a lot more talking. And it's... parts of it I really liked. Like I think Hugh Jackman's a great Wolverine.
Absolutely. And
as an X-Men fan, like X-Men was my comic as a kid. It still doesn't feel like X-Men to me, which is, you know, this is a comic nerd's complaint about X-Men. Mm-hmm. But, so that was fun. We've been playing Division, on and off. Usually I think our ritual is like almost every other night at this point, we'll get on and run
the dailies,
our Division dailies.
Yes.
Lots of news in Division land as well, which we can kind of hint at during the news section if we have time. But mm-hmm. Division's still fun. It's definitely getting grindy.
Yeah.
We're working toward finishing up the Falcon Lost, I guess, is it DLC? It's not really DLC.
No, it's like it was, I would almost call it, it's like part of the update.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're working toward beating that. We tried it with three of us, just Matt, Scott, and I, the other night, and we lost pretty badly. So we decided to gear up a bit more and perhaps pick up a fourth. And what else? Excited about MegaCon. We'll talk about that later. And I watched a lot of Person of Interest, and I kind of messaged Scott and was like, holy cow, like this show, which is all four seasons are available on Netflix now. And
yeah. Are there only four seasons?
There's only four seasons, but season five comes back this week. So season five will be on the air. But all four seasons are available now on Netflix, and I can't recommend it enough, especially once you get into season two.
Yeah, that's what you were telling me, because I would try to watch a few episodes of season one, and it just, I couldn't really get into it. It had too much of, I don't know, just felt like a crime procedural show, and so I couldn't really
on board. It is very much that. It is very much, you know, the first season especially is very procedural, very, you know, crime of the week. Once they get into the mythology of the show and really get into the characters and add additional characters to the cast, like Amy Acker's character Root and such, it becomes, you know, it's one of the best, you know, action thrillers I've seen on TV in a really long time.
Like, is it better than Blindspot?
I would say it's better than Blindspot, but you guys don't like Blindspot as much as I do. Like, I actually kind of like Blindspot, but I think it's definitely much better than Blindspot.
Yeah, it got a little campy, and I kind of just gave up on it because it was just so it's so ridiculous. And I really do like the voice actress that's you know, she's the scientist in the show in Blindspot.
Yes.
But I just couldn't like the show, like they violate their own rules and then they enforce them at other times, and it's just like, oh my gosh. So
yeah. Ashley Johnson from Critical Role.
Yeah, she was in Last of Us, right?
Yes, absolutely. She's great.
Yeah, she's awesome. I watched it just for her essentially, and couldn't hang with it. But I, you know, certainly Person of Interest, I'd love to.
I'm telling you, man, as someone who studies artificial intelligence and such, they do a really great job of trying to make it as realistic and feasible as possible.
What if
I watched some of the behind the scenes stuff, and they actually, some of the code that they put in the show is actually real code. Like when they're coding on screen, they're actually showing like real code, and they try to make it as legitimate and realistic as possible. Obviously it's very sci-fi, like,
yeah,
you know, it becomes a show about two different AIs going to war with one another, but it's really, really well done. Like the thing that I think, and I'm just going to gush about it for 1 second before, but there's only two of us, so we can talk longer.
Do what you want.
Right. But they shoot all on location in New York, and it's so refreshing to see a lot of exterior shots and shots where like weather is actually happening, and just a show where shit isn't constantly on a soundstage. And you kind of forget, like, but then you watch like a lot of like, you know, if you watch like a lot of CW shows, you'll be like, oh man, they're in the same five locations over and over again. Mm-hmm. And very rarely are they like out on a street when it's like raining or snowing. That kind of stuff doesn't really happen all that often. But Person of Interest is all like, except with maybe one or two sets, it's all on location around New York.
That's really cool.
So it is really cool. They're always in different spots. I don't know how the hell they shot this film. They must have just had a great relationship with New York City, because they're just, you know, out in the middle of Times Square shooting and just in Brooklyn shooting. So that's really, it was really cool to see just visually, like, holy cow, like they're really all over the place. And man, and if you're an Amy Acker fan like we are, it is one of her coolest roles ever. Like gun-toting, ultra badass by the time she gets to season four. It's ridiculous.
Maybe we can try to have her back next Thanksgiving, you know, as is tradition on the show.
I know, that would be great. I would love to. I would love to. So if she stumbles across this, you know, come on back, Amy.
Maybe we could reach out to her instead of just hoping that she listens to this.
Like,
yeah,
like a bottle in the water with a message in it.
Of all of our longtime subscribers on this podcast, I don't think Amy Acker is one of them.
Oh, so
sad. As much as I'd love to believe that.
So sad. Well, yeah, we'd love to have her back. I would love to gush to her about the show. And it's great. So definitely check it out. But what have you been doing, man?
All right, let's see. I started watching Kimmy Schmidt. Are you watching season two of Kimmy Schmidt?
You know what's funny? I mentioned earlier that my wife is pretty damn pregnant, and that is our they have Netflix in the birthing suite. I don't know.
Nice.
It's pretty cool, but that's our Netflix in the birthing suite show.
Oh, cool.
So we're saving it for when the baby's being born.
Hey, I got news for you, man. The first couple of weeks you're going to have plenty of time to watch a lot of stuff in bed. Yeah.
That's exciting. I'm ready.
Let's see. So that's really funny. And the humor is just, it's weird. I feel like season one, there was a lot of laugh out loud funny, and season two, I think is very, the writing is so intelligent that you just kind of sit there and think about the jokes, you know, it's very like the humor is very cerebral. And then there's some, you know, kind of slapsticky kind of things too, but, the jokes are just so intricately written that sometimes you miss things that fly by, because the jokes come so quickly, you know, whether it's a piece of visual humor or something that a character says that isn't like a punchline, but you have to think about it for a second. So it's really, season two is very fascinating, I feel like, to watch. And let's see, I played the Mirror's Edge beta for a little bit, and we'll talk about that later.
Okay.
And let's see, playing The Division, I unlocked The Liberator a couple of nights ago.
How was that, man?
It's cool. I think I might go for like a skill build if, you know, if we try to do that. Yeah.
Would you do skill build for damage or for healing stuff?
For right now it's spec for damage, and that just seems to be the gear that I have. So it seems to make the most sense to do that. But that being said, I feel like we're reaching the point where it might be time to take a break from the game, you know?
Yeah. We're getting very repetitive, right? There's not much for us to do. Like,
right. We're not big PvP people. I did go into the Dark Zone the other night just because I was so close to finishing the weekly challenge, that I went in there and I just ran solo, and I just kind of ignored everybody else that was in the environment just to get my mission done. But, you know, even still, I feel like that I've gotten the best gear that I could possibly get without, you know, actually fighting tooth and nail to get all that gear set stuff. And so I just don't know what else there is to do. There's no new story content. And once we finish Falcon Lost, it'll just kind of be, you know, just like when we finished the raid in Destiny, that kind of was like the end of it.
That was it, us.
Yeah, because we felt like there was nothing else to see in the game.
Right.
But, you know, that being said, I feel like I got all kinds of value out of this game. I'm not
for sure.
Yeah, not disappointed at all, but
when you think of game of the year so far, you know, we're just now 5 months into 2016. I would say that it's definitely in the running.
Absolutely.
Just, you know, the amount of time we spent. And I kind of gave it a little bit of shit when we first reviewed it. And I was like, well, you know, it's a lot of fun, but it's a kind of a soulless experience. Because mm-hmm. it is. Like, your yes. character has zero personality. And the people you interact with have zero personality. And there's no real true motivation for doing the things that you're doing other than getting better items. Like, the narrative is just like a, you know, it's like you're watching an episode of 24, but with like with characters with no names in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's
pretty
just
much.
Like, there's a problem. We got to solve it. A disease. Solve problem. And you're just like, all right, I guess I'll do the stuff because it's fun. But
yeah,
the
I
mechanics
mean,
of the game are fucking brilliant. So
yeah, no, all that stuff is good. Like Ubisoft, you know, they've honed the third person, you know, gameplay. It's the best. I don't think there's anything that's better. You know, that they're the gold standard, and they take things from their other games and they kind of roll them into their other franchises. And it makes a lot of sense because everything they're doing works. So they take, you know, bits and pieces from like Assassin's Creed and Splinter Cell, the Splinter Cell series. And even, before that, games like Prince of Persia and all that stuff sort of gets right. rolled into, you know, the experience that we have now in The Division. But, you know, that being said, the gameplay is great, but then after that, there needs to be some story content that lets you exercise the gameplay. And there's been plenty of it, but we've kind of reached the end of it.
Right.
And I feel like The Division 2 is going to be really good. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I know there's still DLC planned for this game, but I don't know, man. After the past couple of games that Ubisoft has put out, I've been sort of let down by the season pass experiences, especially with, you know, the last one with Syndicate.
Right.
In that last Maharaja they put out, you know, Jack the Ripper was awesome DLC, but then the second piece wasn't. And I feel like when you pay what you pay for that season pass and you get one thing that's good and one thing that's not so good, that doesn't make up for it. Right.
Right.
That being said, it's still fun to play, but I'm on the fence right now. But what I have been playing, I went back to Rare Replay again.
Nice.
And yeah, and I totally recommend this game to anybody, especially if you can find it on sale. It's literally 30 games, and I think at one point the price went down to $15. You know what I mean?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So even if four of these games or three of these games are interesting to you, like, it's tremendous value for what you get. And even if you just poke around the other games, it's almost like you're in a museum, you know?
That's cool. That's
yeah.
cool. I've been very tempted, but it's hard for me to go back to older games, but like there's such, and I guess we'll talk about a little bit when we're talking about Gears of War, because you have this like nostalgia brain
mm-hmm.
and you remember games very differently than what they're actually like.
Absolutely.
So sometimes when you fire up an old game, you know, especially one from the early 90s, late 80s, it's really not what your brain remembers, right?
No.
Like, if you tried to play, like, Clay Fighter now, you'd be like, what the fuck am I looking at?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. True, true, true. Yeah. Well, I mean, on that point, I can say that, you know, you'll probably, for most people, you're going to experience this game in one of two ways, right? For people like us, this is nostalgia. Like, we're going back and playing games that we actually owned and played when we were kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then for other people, it's going to be more like a museum. Visiting a museum where you go back and you see all these games that you've heard about, you know, Battletoads, RC Pro-Am, Killer Instinct, some of the earlier games that look like PC games. And some of those are hot garbage, admittedly, but, you know, it shows how far we've come in technology and how far we've come in how gameplay is designed and how balance is designed into games. And so from that perspective, it's really fascinating. And then there's a lot of documentary featurettes that are rolled into the game as well as you play through the different games in Rare Replay. I think it's really cool to your point. I know everybody's pretty stoked on Battletoads. That is a shitty game. I'm not going to lie. The game is so hard just for the sake of being hard. And it's not like we have games that are hard today, you know, like, what is it? Dark Souls or whatever is one of those games that's made to be intentionally hard. But, the Battletoads was, because of the time that it was designed in, was, you know, a very difficult game to play because they made it hard, but it's also difficult to play because it was Nintendo, right? And not,
right,
you don't
right.
have the control, you know, over the game that you do with games today where, you know, you can, you know, tweak everything and min-max and do all this other stuff and find little loopholes and everything. And it just, you would have to like memorize every single thing throughout every level in the game in order to complete a whole run of the game. And I think, you know, everybody remembers that thing in the tunnel, but at the same time, most people never got past that part in the tunnel because that's where your game ends, right? Because that part is so hard. But
yeah,
you know,
I just
what,
remember it being blisteringly hard. I never beat it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what they do with the first 15 games chronologically is that they give you a rewind mechanic that you can use and almost like save load state manager. So it's almost like you're doing an emulator of the game with a rewind mechanic.
Gotcha.
And it makes a lot of those old games playable, you know, not so that you can beat them and feel like you did something, but more like so you can experience the games. Just, you know, like I said, that's why I compare it more to like a museum. So you were talking about it's hard to go back and play old games, but I think they do it in a way where it's meant to just be like, hey, let's step back in time and look at how these things were back then. It's not like you're dusting off an old copy of, you know, like Kung Fu and putting it in your NES and trying to figure out how to play that game again, you know? It's not quite like that, but, I've been playing a lot of that, and it's just really fascinating. I couldn't recommend it enough. And I think that's pretty much it. That's all I've been up to.
Cool. Well, let's take a little quick break, I mean.
Whoops.
Freddy and come back with some news.
News.
All right, so it looks like Scott and I are going to be going to Orlando MegaCon.
Which, I'm excited.
I'm excited. This year is ridiculous. So a little bit about MegaCon. MegaCon's been around a really long time, since I want to say the early 90s in Orlando, and it's kind of grown to become Florida's definitely biggest convention and actually one of the biggest conventions on the East Coast. I think they have, you know, over 75,000 people. I mean, it's gotten to be the like absolutely gargantuan. And Scott and I will be there covering it for NA, which is pretty exciting. And they have some really ridiculous guests. I just kind of want to kind of,
oh, it's absurd. It's amazing
about
this year.
So we have Haley Atwell is going to be there, which is ridiculous.
Agent Carter, she's the best. Yeah,
Ming-Na Wen's going to be there. Lena Headey from Game of Thrones. Lenny James from Walking Dead.
John Cusack?
John Cusack.
Come on.
John Cusack's going to be there.
Yeah.
It's kind of ridiculous. The Punisher, John Bernthal, is going to be there. Katie Cassidy from Arrow.
Bonnie Wright
from the Harry Potter films. Kevin Smith.
Eldon Henson.
Yeah, Eldon Henson. It's ridiculous.
Daredevil,
like, the lineup is the biggest I've like it's ever been, to be honest. I mean, we've been going, well, actually, little backstory, MegaCon was my first convention when I was a kid. My mom brought me to MegaCon.
Oh yeah.
Before I could even drive. So she drove me. We lived in South Florida when I was growing up. She drove me all the way from South Florida. We spent the night in Orlando as a road trip, and she took me to MegaCon, and I think I was like maybe 13 or 14 years old.
That's amazing.
No, it was really cool. And, you know, I've been going almost every year since, and now it's great that we get to go as press and run around and hopefully talk to some people. But a little bit about MegaCon, come see us. We'll be there. So if you're a show listener, you just happen to be in Orlando on these dates, then come by. It's May 26th to the 29th, and it's at the Orange County Convention Center. You know, give us a tweet at Nerd Appropriate. Say hi to us. We'll meet you on the convention floor, and we'll buy you a Mrs. Fields cookie and hang out.
Whoa. Hey, slow down, man.
Promising cookies to everybody.
We're on a budget. We need more Loot Crate subscriptions to do that.
To buy more cookies. They are like $7 cookies.
Yeah, especially at the convention center. But the con itself, aside from the guests, is amazing, too. The expo floor is ginormous. And in addition to sort of the, you know, the guests that you see on the screen, there are also a lot of comic book guests, you know, which include a lot of great art. It's a great place to go to buy art if you're a comic book fan.
Yeah.
There are people, you know, selling comic book art on the show floor. There are people that will, you know, sometimes they'll sketch something for you, very personalized thing for you to take back home with you to put on your wall. So there's like all kinds of great stuff to do there. And obviously cosplay is a big part of it too. You'll see people dress up.
Oh, lots of cosplay. MegaCon is huge for cosplay, so yeah, cosplayers come in from all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, it's something you know, something that I take my wife to, who's not like, you know, into a bunch of super nerdy stuff, but she likes to go and check out the cosplay, which is really exciting too. It's just a fun weekend, a great way to spend a day if you have a day to come down here and check it out. It's really cool.
Yeah, they shot Heroes of Cosplay there a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then, cool. Panels and all that other good stuff. So
yeah, I'm looking forward to the, I don't think the programming is out quite yet, but I'm definitely going to check that out this year. I usually miss it because I just am usually running around too much, but I think this year I will have an opportunity to check out some of the programming. So definitely check out Orlando MegaCon, and I think tickets are still on sale. So go there and say hi to us.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Good times. So what do you talk to me about this Doom co-creator Kickstarter? I actually know a little bit about this, so I'm not going to come in blind to it.
Okay, good. So I just wanted to bring this up because I thought the concept was interesting, but the co-creators of Doom, which are John Romero and Adrian Carmack, put up a Kickstarter for a new FPS game called Black Room. And the concept behind the game is that it was supposed to be set in sort of like a virtual environment and then things go awry. So it's like a holodeck simulator. And then things go crazy, and then it's an FPS game. So I think the concept sounded really awesome, and they put a Kickstarter up. I think they asked for $700,000, and they got to about $135,000 before they pulled it down. And I think the major problem is that they didn't have any gameplay footage.
Yeah.
So there was no demo.
Which is funny because one of the stipulations for Kickstarter is the fact that you are supposed to have a working demo before you can actually get your Kickstarter approved.
Is that just apply to games or everything? Do they want to see prototypes for everything? Is that the idea now?
I don't know if it's prototypes for everything, but I know with games you at least have to have a working demo. But again, they're, pretty big names. They're pretty famous guys.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
And kind of cheat the system.
I think that was kind of the weird thing, is that did they think just sort of on the name recognition alone that they could make it work and kind of go through and ask for the money? I don't know, but I mean, that was sort of what played into it for me as well, was, I visited the Kickstarter. The concept sounded interesting. I'm honestly surprised that a game like this hasn't been made already, in sort of this virtual reality setting where things kind of go crazy and you can do a lot with that concept. It kind of reminds me of like Westworld, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a great concept. But again, it's like you have to come, especially the gaming population, I could sit there and be like, oh, I got this great game and just sit there and talk about it. But no one's going to give me, no one's going to give me, well, obviously me, no one's going to give me any money.
Yeah.
But, they weren't getting the money that they were expecting at a rate that they were comfortable. See, the reason why they pulled out is they didn't want to be seen as incapable of actually achieving that goal, because their Kickstarter was slowing down.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they would have reached their, $700,000 in the amount.
No, I don't think they would have. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they didn't want to go down looking like losers. So they're like, oh, we'll just pull it and actually maybe create a demo. But
yeah,
I don't know, man.
I think that was the right, move from the start would have been to have a gameplay demo. But I do hope this game exists in some form someday.
Just right,
because it seems so fascinating.
I do too. And here's I've been hearing a lot of kind of scathing reviews of the Doom beta that was just out.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of feel like Doom appeals to a very certain demographic. Like if you are like a 20-year-old millennial, you don't remember it.
Yes.
You don't remember it because it wasn't around in any capacity. Maybe when you were very, very young, but you probably weren't allowed to play it. So it's people that are, at this point in their 30s and up. And we realize, most people in their 30s and up realize, that while Doom was awesome for the 90s, other games have far surpassed what Doom was. And,
yes.
And the concept of Doom was cool, but was it cool enough to warrant this resurgence, to warrant like the accolades and praise of the creators of Doom. I mean, I loved Doom, man. I'm not gonna lie. But so many shooters have come out since then that are conceptually, I think, a little bit more highbrow and play a lot better. So
the genre has evolved, right?
Right, absolutely. Yeah.
I'm in the same boat as you. I had this Doom programming book that like weighed the size of a cinder block, and you could create your own levels in Doom.
I remember it. Yeah. The cover was green.
Yeah. Well, it was like the Doom Programming Gurus. It was a book about like how to build your own Doom levels. It came with a disc and you could level editor and everything. And it's not like the stuff that exists today. It was like a pain in the ass to use. But I've been there. And since we're talking about, like, it seems like we're talking a lot about nostalgia. For me, I feel like I've already played that game. I've already played Doom, and that ship has sort of sailed for me at this point,
Right.
That's one part of it. And it's not like you know, I can play Assassin's Creed every year because I'm still sort of in that mindset. I can play, you know, a Mass Effect game 1, 2, 3, 4 or whatever it is, you know, because I'm still playing those games. But then to go back and go, hey, you know, we know that there's cover-based shooters and all this other stuff, but we're going to go back to like games where you ice skate, you know, across the maps and kind of shoot at people and there's no cover and all this other stuff.
Right,
you know?
Right. Yeah, it's weird. I think it does appeal to someone. It may not be me anymore though, you know?
Yeah. I just feel like mentally I've moved past it. I didn't play the Doom beta, but, you know, even the concept for this particular game, I thought, for Black Room, I thought was interesting enough that even if the gameplay was, you know, the old school, you know, ice skating mechanic with no cover, I would at least try it. And I'm, you know, honestly, I know that some of that nostalgia was sort of baked into games like BioShock Infinite, you know, where they wanted it to feel, you know, they even had a mode in the game called 1999 mode. And even for me,
right, yeah,
that style of gameplay wore on me over time, even as wonderful as that game was, as great as the narrative was, you know, going back to that old school style gameplay, I was just like, man, we could really use a cover mechanic or something, you know?
Yeah. And it's not even just, you know, I'm a huge fan of cover mechanics in games, but even in modern shooters, there's, you know, progression and unlocks and, you know, special moves and all of these things yes. that didn't exist in the yes. time of Doom. And you get a blending of genres now, which is really a huge relief, like, you know, progression and leveling up. And
oh, even like, you know, doing, you know, kind of have your modern action adventure game, like your Uncharted or Lara Croft that blends, you know, climbing, little platforming, FPS and all that other
right.
stuff. Yeah.
Right. No, I totally agree. So it's hard just to go back and be like, yeah, we're the guys that made, you know, we're the guys that made Doom. Give us some money. Everyone's like, well, what are you bringing to the table now that, you know, the shooter has evolved to the level that it has evolved, you know? So I think maybe one reason as to why they didn't get the money as quickly as they were expecting.
Yeah.
And you know, I would love to play whatever the hell these guys put out, you know, but at the same time, it's like, I want to kind of see what they're working at.
Yeah. Same. I mean, you know, even to that same note, there have been multiple attempts to bring back the classic first-person puzzle game, The Seventh Guest, you know?
Right, right.
Multiple attempts to make the third game in that series, and there just has not been enough interest in something like that to get a game like that off the ground. And I don't know, maybe Kickstarter is not the right forum for these nostalgia games. Maybe you just need to sort of get them out there, let people play them. Maybe the console isn't the right platform. Maybe mobile is the right platform. Who knows?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that might be right.
It's just a weird thing. So that's the nostalgia piece. I just wanted to talk about it a little bit, 'cause I thought the concept for the game itself was interesting, even if there were no, there was no demo to back it up.
Right. No. So we'll see. Maybe they'll put I think they'll probably end up putting the Kickstarter up again.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is good, and we'll probably report on it when it comes out.
Let's talk about The Punisher.
The Punisher. So this is a bit of news that Matt is excited about, and we are as well. It was rumored a long time ago that John Bernthal would reprise his role as The Punisher in a new Netflix series similar to, you know, Daredevil, Jessica Jones. And it looks like it's actually happening. So it has a green light, and it looks like we are going to get a brand new Punisher series, starring John Bernthal. So it's going to be same run as Daredevil. So it looks like 10 to 12 episodes, and it's going to be coming right around the same time, if not right after The Defenders. So who knows if Punisher is going to be in The Defenders in any capacity. My guess is probably in like an episode or two. I don't think they'll make him a defender, 'cause that doesn't really suit his style. But I think he'll probably pop up, because he is, you know, going to be in the same area as the rest of the heroes.
How many people live in Hell's Kitchen, man? There seems like a very...
Yeah, I don't know. Very Matt tight would know exactly town. How many blocks it is, but I don't think Hell's Kitchen is very large.
Well, I mean, if I were to go and look at the division map, which I'm assuming is 100% accurate, I don't think it's very large at all.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think it's very... It's probably like, I don't know, like 6 or 7 blocks at the most.
Yeah, and something
that's just
like that.
my guess.
It's a rough estimate. I'm sure that's completely accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so now we have, you know, Daredevil, we have Punisher, we have Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, and then we said Cloak and Dagger are also Hell's Kitchen heroes. So
jeez.
It's a very crowded area. And then you have, you know, Peter Parker, who occasionally swings through there. So
oh, interesting.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like Netflix, this is gonna be a very nostalgia filled episode, but it seems like Netflix is is starting to revive a lot of old things, you know, like Fuller House is very nostalgic.
Right, right.
You know, and they did the Pee Wee movie came to Netflix as well. You know what I would like to see come to Netflix as sort of a revival thing is Saturday morning cartoons.
Oh my God, man.
You know
that
what I mean?
Be the best thing
like
ever.
What if it was like Netflix announces, you know, 13 episode run of X-Men animated or something. You know what I mean?
Oh my gosh. You just hit something.
I think we just stumbled onto something here.
You know, a long time ago, I did a roundtable interview, and the person at the round, one of the people at the roundtable was a reporter from Netflix who was basically at this roundtable scouting for new properties to bring to series. And she was just talking to everybody at the table, and she was like, yeah, if you know you have any great ideas, I wish I still had her card, because I'd be like, yeah. Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to revive things that, you know, people our age liked back in the day, like in the 80s and 90s or whatever, that was something that doesn't really exist anymore.
Which is a shame. It really is.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not like, I mean, obviously I would love it if they went back and redid old school Transformers, like Gen 1 Transformers cartoons or whatever, or G.I. Joe or whatever. But, you know, just pick something. Just pick something and put it out there and see if it works. Because if, you know, if Fuller House works and if Pee Wee works, Pee Wee was a Saturday morning, you know, style. It wasn't a cartoon, but it was in that same vein of things you would watch in the morning. Then you could absolutely go and put out, you know, old school cartoons, like just draw them in that same way and put them out there. I bet it would work. I bet it would be amazing.
I agree. It'd have to be just like a big block. You could just hit play on the whole, like every Saturday, there'd be a new block of cartoons, you know?
Yes. Oh my God.
Different publishers and such.
It would be so good. It would just be so good. I would love it. I think people would love it too. They could do this whole marketing thing with the interface, Saturday morning cartoons, you know, they're back or something. It would be,
Be so great.
It'd be so great. So the last thing I wanted to talk about, it's interesting because I wrote this down, you know, a day ago, I think, or 2 days ago. And now this news has changed. And what I wrote here was the future of Battlefield announcement coming this Friday. But what's interesting about this news is that the next Call of Duty was announced in the 24-hour span since we wrote this item down on our show notes. So I think we should talk about both of these things.
Well, let's talk about the Call of Duty trailer first, because we've actually seen that.
Yes. Yeah.
I haven't played a Call of Duty since, I want to say, Modern Warfare 2. And I played all of them prior to Modern Warfare 2. So I played them from the very beginning, and I was a big fan of the franchise because I'm a big military history guy. That's what I did in college. So I loved playing through all the old Call of Duties that, you know, were back in, you know, World War II and such. And then, you know, I got too slow and too old, and and I couldn't really compete anymore, especially with how incredible people got in a Call of Duty. So I kind of dropped out, and now, what is it called? Call of Duty?
Infinite Warfare.
Infinite Warfare, yeah.
Which is weird.
It's in space, and it looks fucking awesome, man.
I mean, I think it's weird because the studio is called Infinity Ward, and then they made a game called Infinite Warfare.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, man, it looks like there's an invasion of some sort that hits Earth, and it's in the near future because everyone's still using, you know, ballistic weapons, not laser weapons and shit. And then it looks like you take off into space and do some space fighting. But man, that trailer just, it got me. I don't know what it was. Maybe it was the music. I don't know, but I was totally on board, and I was like, all right, I want to see what this is all about.
I think you're right. I think it got the attention of a lot of people because it was space. And I think people were really getting sort of worn out on the, you know, sort of hyper realistic, you know, warfare simulation, special forces, things like that. And even, you know, World War II, World War I, all that kind of stuff. I think people were almost like burnt out on the simulation game, and now they're kind of taking it in a completely different direction. And, you know, to be honest with you, the last game I played was of Call of Duty World at War, which came out in 2008.
Wow. Yeah. I remember that was the Pacific Theater against Japan one, right?
Yeah. And so I mostly consider myself a Battlefield player, you know, as opposed to Call of Duty player. So like you said, this got my attention because it's set in space, it has a futuristic angle to it. You know, I think one of my favorite Battlefield games, which I thought was highly underrated, was 2142, which used the whole thing with the, you know, the Titan combat and like sort of the future weaponry and things like that. And it had that, I don't know what you call it now, but you know, there are other games that have this mode now, but I think it was that Titan mode where you can, you know, you get in the jump pods and you fly up and you assault the enemy's carrier. And
yeah,
you
it's go, 142. That was great.
Yeah, remember you could go inside the carrier and like destroy the core. That was one way you could win the game, was just like to get onto this enemy floating airship base and kind of destroy everything from the inside. And so it opened up a lot of combat possibilities because you could be fighting on the ground. Traditionally, you could be fighting, you know, in these vehicles in the sky. And it was just, I thought the whole concept was so amazing. And then that was kind of it. It went away after that. Yeah, you know,
it went away pretty quickly too. It was I remember that being very, you know, there were a lot of things. I don't remember which happened first, that or Planet Side, but 2142 and Planet Side had a lot of similar themes. Like you would, you know, break into something and have to fight interiors. And it was like really, really well done and really intense. And then you're right, it just kind of faded away.
Yeah, that was also the thing that people liked about Star Wars Battlefront 2, which they didn't put, you know, like a lot of people were like, hey, in Star Wars Battlefront 2, you had this mode where you could fly into the enemy Star Destroyer, run around inside the base and blow everything up, and then jump on a ship and steal it and fly out of the base. And then Battlefront, you know, Star Wars Battlefront came out from EA and people were like, hey, this game is missing a lot of stuff that used to be in the old one.
It's all right. We'll add Greedo and Nien Nub because that is going to really drive people to,
I don't know, man,
want to play that game more.
Dude, I played a Star Wars Battlefront on PSP that you could go all the way from, you know, spaceship to space combat to atmospheric combat, and then land the ship on the ground and jump out and start fighting people, right?
On the PSP, yeah.
On the PSP, yeah. It was like this weird like offshoot game. Admiral Akbar was in it, so I was super stoked, obviously. Having this sort of fantastical angle, I think, is what has been missing from this genre. And I think Infinite Warfare is finally going to tap into the thing that people have been wanting from these games for a while now. And I think you saw it with Titanfall kind of scratch that itch and showed people, you know, showed developers like, this is what people want now. And so now that this is out, this news is out, there's supposed to be now an announcement from Battlefield on Friday.
Oh, man.
What could it possibly be? The tagline is the future of Battlefield announcement on Friday. So do you think they're going to go in this future direction as well? Maybe like a 2142 kind of thing?
I heard rumors. I don't know if there's any validity to this. But okay. Rumblings that it is going to go back to World War One.
Oh, my God.
Which would blow my mind because that is a theater that has, you know, or a time period really that has, you know, other than a couple small indie games, it's never really had a large game based around World War One, other
yeah,
than
you're
you
right.
know, some simulators and such. But I would be huge. You could have zeppelins, biplanes, gas weapons, chemical weapons, like, you know, you have bolt action weapons and, you know, sort of the birth of the, you know, or the same time period where the machine gun becomes popular. You have mounted combat and then you have the first tanks. So it could be just, it's a fucking bizarre time in history, man. And I really think that it could be incredible if done correctly in a game.
That is interestingly, you know, the World War One setting is a time period that seems to have not been overdone and people
right.
seem to want it a lot. And so it's kind of like a head scratcher why there isn't a lot of that. What I would like to see
right.
personally is the alternate history World War One. You know what I mean?
Ah, yeah.
Like where,
yeah.
you know, it's sort of like there are zeppelins and it's like, it's almost as if you're in, you know, like alternate fringe universe
yes.
or whatever.
Yes.
And you know, we've seen kind of what that could look like as far as like weird alternate histories go, or even that style, not even alternate history, but that style of combat. You kind of see that in spoiler alert. You see some of that in Assassin's Creed, Syndicate. You see some of that in the Saboteur. Like, you remember the Saboteur?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Saboteur.
Yeah. Some of that, there was like some Zeppelin, really cool. Zeppelin combat in a game like that. But yeah, you're right. I think it's an interesting period in time. There are a lot of things you can do stylistically.
Just imagine getting on horseback with a bunch of your friends and trying to ride across no man's land with like a tank rolling at 8 miles per hour coming toward you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, absolutely.
And then like, you know, biplanes that are barely going like, you know, 100 miles per hour, slowly kind of creeping overhead, you know, dropping railroad spikes on your head. I mean, it could be absolutely incredible.
That could be cool considering that in Battlefield, hardly anybody knows how to fly the jet.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Just imagine, you know, the really cool Zeppelin fights and things that could happen. You know, I just think it could be incredible. But hey, look, Kate Dollarhide wants to join the show, so we're going to go ahead and add her.
Oh, this is we haven't done this in a long time.
Join in progress. Here we go.
Join in progress.
Hello, hello. Kate Dollarhide. You're on the Rated NA podcast. You won the prize. You are our first caller ever.
You can win 2 pair of tickets to go see Katy Perry live at the Amphitheater Saturday night if you tell us what your favorite podcast is.
I would absolutely do that.
I would do that too. Yeah. Right. Do you really have Katy Perry tickets?
No, I do not.
Damn it.
It was the first thing that came to mind. I don't know.
I know. We're about halfway through the show and we were actually just talking about the new Call of Duty trailer that dropped today. What did you think? I saw your response on Twitter, so I know what you thought, but tell the listeners what you thought.
Oh my God, I loved it. So my husband sent it to me while I was at work and I didn't want to click on it because I was like, I don't care about Call of Duty. He's like, no, you got to watch. Just watch it. Just watch it. So I was like, all right. And it's normal stuff. It's like soldiers and exploding things, whatever. And then there's ships and suddenly the ships go into space and then there's a space battle.
Isn't that right?
Yeah.
I had the same reaction and then the Major Tom to ground control kicked in and I had like full body goosebumps. I was like, what am I feeling? I'm like,
I was like holding my breath. I didn't want to breathe. I was like, what's going to happen?
Yeah, it was really, really cool. And I think really well put together, but I think Scott and I both liked it and I'm glad you liked it too.
Yeah.
It's very exciting. We were saying earlier that it seems like a lot of people want space combat in their, you know, those two series, Battlefield and Battlefront have sort of been reluctant, or Battlefield and Call of Duty have sort of been reluctant to venture into that space with the exception of 2142. And then all of a sudden you get a game that goes from ground to space and people are freaking out. I wonder why it's taken this long to do that.
It's like the zeitgeist is here. People are hungry for more space games.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's absolutely true. I mean, you see all the hype around No Man's Sky and, you know,
definitely.
It's ridiculous. That game's going to sell millions of copies and no one has really spent any time with it.
No one knows anything about it. Yeah.
Everyone's like, it's coming soon. It's going to blow your mind. We don't really know too much yet.
I don't think I ever want to play that game just so I have this crazy, fantastical version of it in my head, you know?
Yeah, I'm going to stream it and I'm just going to name all the creatures that I encounter after like different disgusting body parts.
Or diseases or something.
Yeah, like chode golem.
Oh boy.
The most ash thing that you could do.
That's what the internet's for. That's what Twitch is for, right?
Chode golems. Yeah.
That's why I have like, or that's why Nerd Appropriate has like a whopping like 30 Twitch followers.
Well, I mean, we'll only stream like what, 3 or 4 times at this point?
That is true.
Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there.
One day. Well, welcome, Kate. Let's do full disclosure. We tried to record last night, but we had technical glitch. And so we actually recorded a whole intro with Kate last night. And then we just were like, you know what? We're just going to do it and see what happens.
It's a lost episode. This is actually 232.5.
It is. Episode, yeah. There's like a tenth of an episode lost in the ether someplace.
Mm-hmm.
But welcome. Thanks for hanging out. For those of you who don't know Kate, where can people find you on the internet, Kate?
You can find me on Twitter at Kate D and on the internet, I guess, at katedollarhide.com.
Nice.
Absolutely.
Nice.
Kate takes amazing photos, by the way. You guys should go check out her work. Yeah, it's incredible.
Can't wait to read her magical words because you've been writing a lot.
Yes, she writes magical words as well, which is super
cool.
True.
I've been writing a lot, yeah.
Helped out many times on the podcast, which we appreciate. So that's super awesome too. Thank you so much.
Oh, well, my pleasure.
Well, good. Well, you're here just in time for our reviews. So let's take a quick break and come back with reviews of Gears of War 4 Beta, Mirror's Edge Beta. All right, we're back with some reviews, and I'm going to be talking about the Gears of War 4 beta, which just ended actually today on May 1st. And there's so much I love about this beta, and there's so much that just drove me insane. So I'll start out with the things that I really enjoyed. It's definitely Gears of War. So if you've ever played Gears of War competitively in any capacity, so any of the past Gears of War, you know, Gears of War 2, Gears of War 3, it's going to feel very much the same. So the mechanics are nearly identical. The way you control the characters, the way you move, the way the weapons feel, the sound effects, like all of it is, I would say, as close to identical as Gears of War 2 and Gears of War 3 as humanly possible.
I have a question. Was the beta, was it all multiplayer, first of all?
Yes, so it was all multiplayer.
Was it all competitive multiplayer?
It was all competitive multiplayer.
Okay.
Yeah, so there was no Horde mode. They actually haven't announced if there's going to be Horde mode in Gears of War 4 yet. I'm assuming there is, because it's insanely popular, and they'd be insane if they didn't include it.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I like playing that with you guys.
Right. That was the kind of the birth of the popularity of Horde modes, you know, in most games.
Well, in that game, there was like some tower defense too, right? Because you could build things and get power-ups and stuff like that, yeah?
Yeah, in 3 there was. In 3 you could build like fences and shit like that.
Yeah, that was fun.
So none of that in the Gears of War 4 beta. I guess a little bit of background about the game. So it's no longer being developed by Epic. It's being developed by the Coalition. Of course, Microsoft acquired the license for Gears of War, and they're in control of the IP now, and the Coalition is building Gears of War for the very first time. It's weird. Like I said, so much of it is the same that part of me didn't feel like I was playing a different game.
Oh.
Yeah, and I was like, man, I'm honestly just playing like a rehash of Gears of War 3.
Well, wait a minute. Didn't the Coalition, or what is now known as the Coalition, didn't they make Jugement? Gears of War Jugement?
No, that was actually People Can Fly.
Oh, because that game was really good, but that makes sense now. They made, what's that hilarious game? They made that one, right?
People Can Fly, yeah. What was the name of that game? Oh my gosh.
The one where you could like shit stop people and get points for doing it.
Yeah, it was like the first year of the podcast we talked about it
constantly. Yeah, I don't know. It'll come to me. Just keep talking.
Oh yeah. So anyway, so the Coalition is making Gears of War 4. Like I said, it feels very much the same. Like the mechanics are all the same, and that's both good and bad. Like you're not going to get complaints from players that, you know, they're sullying the experience because it's virtually an identical experience. So there are some new mechanics, like some of the big ones they added were a wall grab, where you can actually, if you and an opposing player are on the same piece of cover, you can actually reach across the cover and pull them across.
What?
And then execute them, which is really neat. So, you know, there's a lot of different things you can do. You can still leap over cover and do a kick that stuns them, or you can pull them over cover and kill them, which is cool. They actually changed the active reload, which is, you know, Gears of War's big thing. So now active reload has a little icon next to it. And when you active reload and you actually hit on the sweet spot when you're reloading, you'll get the damage boost. But you can do that at any time now. So you can have a full magazine and you can do an active reload and give you a damage boost. But it's on a timer. So you can't just keep active reloading. You can do it like every, you know, 15, 20 seconds.
Wait, so in the old game, couldn't you just fire off a bullet and then do active reload? Or are they trying to curb that behavior?
You could do that. In the old game, yes. But in the new game, you can do it with a full magazine. You don't have to fire off those rounds.
Right.
You
is it still
reload your magazine? Yeah.
Is it still timing based where it's like you have to hit the little marks?
Right. And the timing is exactly the same. Like I've played so much Gears of War. It's in muscle memory. So I can do active reloads without even looking at the
ball. Like on your Lancer, it's just like it's built into your body now.
It is built into my, absolutely. And it's exactly the same. So the timing hasn't changed. And that's, you know, part of me was a little bit disappointed. Like there were some things that felt off about the Gears of War 4 beta. And a lot of them were graphical, which is weird. Like, and I understand it's a very, I don't think they should have called it a beta. I think they should have called it an alpha. First of all, because there were very few modes that were available during the beta. We had like a basic team deathmatch and something called dodgeball mode, which was cool. I'll talk about it in a minute. But and also like the graphics weren't done. Like there were a lot of things that were incomplete, and Gears of War is such a polished experience in the past, at least, that, you know, seeing an incomplete, like the graphics being incomplete, was just weird to me. Like there were times where you would rev your chainsaw and the chainsaw wouldn't spin. And
oh,
the
boy.
Smoke wouldn't come out. You'd just be holding the chainsaw and it wouldn't be making the sound and nothing would be happening. You're like, what am I looking at here? Which is just weird. You know?
I think there would not have been as much buzz about the demo if, you know, instead of a beta they called it like the technical stress test or something.
Right. And they should have, because the game's not coming out till October, and this beta was in April. So they obviously have a ton of work to do. Like, you know, when games this large, you know, before they go gold, they're working up until the day that they go gold, and you're adding tons of shit until the day they go gold. So the fact that it's April, and then you have May, June, July, August, September, 6 months of work mm-hmm. left to do on a large title like this means that it's not close to being done. And it showed. And I mean, I'm not trying to be incredible. I am trying to be critical, but at the same time, it's like, well, I just played the Ultimate Edition of Gears of War, the remake of Gears of War 1 for Xbox One, and it is fucking gorgeous.
Yes.
It is absolutely gorgeous to look at. Like, I couldn't even get over how beautiful it looked. And that was done by the Coalition. I look at Gears of War 4, and it looked, to me, it looked fucking ugly, man.
Weird. That's weird that the two games would look so different if they're the same engine, in theory. Not the same engine, but maybe the same graphical engine, I suppose.
Well, it just, I could tell, like, that polish pass hadn't been done yet. Like, the lighting was, everything was really bright. Like, everything was really bright. All the stages were very, very bright. And they, you know, they talked about in a lot of the press for Gears of War 4 that there's going to be this, you know, huge part of the game is going to be weather and storms and things like that. And so there's some rain in the 4 beta, but it was, it felt like rain from, like, you know, Xbox 360. It was very simple.
Just visual only, or is it supposed to impact the gameplay in some way?
I think in single player during the story mode, it impacts gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
Much like how the, what was it called? Razor Hail or Razor or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But, so yeah, graphically, I mean, graphically, I was disappointed. The character models didn't look done. They just didn't look polished. A lot of their skin was, like, kind of flat looking, and I was just like, you know, but it's a beta, and I'm just being way too critical because it's a franchise I love. And when I say I love it, like, I'm a fucking huge nerd for Gears of War. I've read all the books. I have a Lancer on my wall in my house.
True story.
I have a Marcus Fenix statue, a stupid flag. Like, I love this franchise. I think it's a brilliant piece of work.
Yep.
And so when I got 4 and it felt off, it really kind of bummed me out a little bit. But that being said, there was a reward for reaching level 20 in the beta.
And did you reach level 20 in the beta?
And I reached level 20 in the beta.
I bet you did.
But I was a cranky motherfucker through that entire process, because I am not good at competitive multiplayer Gears of War. I'm not. Mm-hmm. Because all anyone does is they wall jump or wall slide or whatever the fuck they call it with the Nasher shotgun. And it's like being against like 20 ninjas that just have the ability to instantly kill you. And I'm sitting there with my Lancer, like, and it feels like you're firing a rapid fire BB gun at them. You hit them 75 times and they're still alive, and they get close to you and you just turn into a pile of goo. And you're like, I don't even know what to do here. So I did make it to level 20, and I got all the 20 level 20 bonuses and stuff.
Did you get the ice cube skin or whatever it is?
No, it's almost worse than that. It's like a skin for one of the characters, and like a card, and like a weapon skin. And I'm like, oh, this isn't even as cool as like a,
that's okay. You'll have it.
That's right. And I know I would have been pissed if I didn't have it.
That's right.
But so, real quick about the mode that they added for the beta that was fun. It was something called dodgeball mode, and dodgeball mode was a competitive multiplayer. It's team deathmatch, but you only start out with 5 lives. Everyone on the team has 1 life. As your team dies, they're out. And if you take an enemy life, you have one of your pals come back in the game.
Oh.
So it's a tug of war, which is really, really fun. So you play a lot differently when you know you only have 1 life.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone takes it very seriously. And if you get out, then one of your pals does well, you get back in, and then you kind of even the odds. And I've seen it go from where there's 1 person left on a team against 5 to, you know, end up winning the match. So it is a really neat mode that I think is different and fun, and I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that's really smart. I could see how one person could turn the tide in a match like that, and it gives you a reason to not quit, you know, before the round ends, and maybe that's what they're trying to do with that.
Right. But I mean, obviously this is a title, you know, we joke all the time, like sometimes we'll kind of nitpick at games, but you know, this is something obviously I'm going to pick
up. You're very passionate about it. I think that's why you can be so nitpicky about it.
I mean, you know, and I know I'm being critical, but again, it is very early. We're 6 months out from the game actually being done.
Mm-hmm.
And that, again, that just kind of bums me out because it tells me that this may have been like you said, a technical stress test to see what the servers can do and so on and so forth, but label it as such, let people know. And then, you know, be upfront with your messaging and let people know that, hey, this is, you know, very much a work in progress. This is not what the game is going to look like. And we're making changes here and there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, whether you tell people that or not, people are still going to form opinions based on the game. And so if you put that out there, you're going to run the risk of people forming those perceptions, even though they know it's a beta. It's going to happen either way.
Right. Yeah. And you're going to have people that are now in the camp that, you know, Gears of War 4 is exactly the same. Gears of War 4 looks like shit. And that's not going to be the case, likely not going to be the case when it comes out.
So. No, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, which is a bummer. But anyway, fun, I would say definitely when the game comes out in October, check it out. There'll probably be I'm assuming there's going to be another beta prior to that. They'll have to do that. So
absolutely.
But tell me about Mirror's Edge, man.
Okay, so I don't have a lot to say about Mirror's Edge, but unfortunately, some of what I have to say is sort of similar in theme to what you had to say about Gears of War.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I'm a huge Mirror's Edge fan. I really did enjoy the first game
a
lot.
Do you have a statue?
I don't have a statue, but...
Do you have a body pillow?
No, I don't have a body pillow. I don't own any merch, but it was a game that sort of like, it resonated with me, and I just thought it was so unique for the time, you know, what they were trying to do. And I think what I perceive to be the problem with the new Mirror's Edge is that it sort of takes an old franchise and it kind of bends it to the will of what is popular in gaming right now, right? So the original Mirror's Edge game was a linear sort of adventure game that you could play through, and then afterwards there would be some time trials and some DLC that you could get afterwards to extend the experience of the game, right? So the new Mirror's Edge appears to roll up all of that stuff and put the game into an open world environment.
Oh, that's different.
Yeah. So, and I think, and that's kind of what I'm saying about how it's, you know, changing based on current trends in gaming, right? Is that like every game that comes out for current gen, it seems like is an open world game. And, you know, there's some advantages to doing that because you can spread collectibles throughout the environment and it sort of artificially pads the gameplay or whatever, you know, whatever you want to call it, right? But, you know, just imagine if, you know, if Gears of War 4 was announced as an open world game and it's like you can go wherever you want in this, like, you know, destroyed city and go kill people and do all this other stuff, you kind of be like, what? I don't know, you know, because what makes a linear game great, although it creates a short game, is that you get in most cases you get sort of a more polished narrative, something that's a little more coherent, something that maybe hits a little harder than what you get out of an open world game. Because you could play an open world game in a way where you play a third of the story, spend 20 hours doing side quests, and then by the time you get back to the core story again, you've kind of lost your interest or even knowledge of what's happening in the game. And so that's sort of my fear with the new Mirror's Edge game, is that in going to open world, it's going to lose a lot of the punch that the original game had in it. That being said, the free running mechanic, of course, is amazing. They did something weird where they added a skill tree to the game, which I think is a little bizarre, but it's more like the Batman skill tree from the second game where it appears as if, and I don't know if this is just for the beta or if this is how it's actually going to be released, but your character starts with, you know, half of her stats unlocked already. Like, so Faith has half of her abilities in this beta. And so I don't know, you know, if it's going to work out that way in the full game or if you're going to start from zero or whatever. But in this one, you know, I just think it's an interesting approach to doing it that way. Because, you know, again, in sort of the theme of how games were and how they are now, you know, we talk a lot about like how you play these games that have skill trees, and we do enjoy skill trees. But at the same time, you kind of get tired of the first 10 hours of the game where you can't do anything and you feel super underpowered. Yeah. And by the time you unlock all your abilities, you get to the end of the game, it feels amazing and you love the game, right?
Right. No, yeah. I totally agree. And that's unfortunately something that happens in a lot of games. Like,
yeah,
they kind of hide the fun until you're halfway through and then you're like, this is amazing. Why did I suffer through the first 10 hours of being like, you know, unable, you know, basically being like a mortal person in this game. You know?
Yeah, we talk about this a lot. We talked about it in the first Batman game did this. We talked about it in Fuse. We talked about it in Borderlands. And so, you know, depending on what those skills are, if you start out as a character that feels woefully underpowered, it's like a very hard game to play. So I have that's my fear. They added, and I don't know if they added it, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't in the original game. They added sort of a guide to help people not get lost when they're playing the game, which I think is important for an open world game. So you can almost set, you know, in the same way that The Division or any game has like a marker that you can follow on screen, like a waypoint kind of thing. This game has that, but it does it is sort of a holographic version of yourself doing the moves as well. So you don't get lost.
Okay.
So you know what to do, which I think would be helpful. And the thing that is hard about this game is that although it's a first person game, it's certainly not, it's not an FPS because she doesn't use weapons. But it's not really that style of game at all in any sense, even though there's a combat mechanic. I think, in my opinion, this game has more in common with, a sports game like skateboarding or snowboarding or whatever, because it is parkour. And the thing that hurts so bad about these games is that when you're good at the game is awesome. And then when you're bad at the game, it's like, it's terrible. Right. So you know what I mean? Like if you know how to play a game like SSX, you can get in there and there's explosions and fireworks and you're doing all these tricks and getting points and things. Same thing with Mirror's Edge is that, you know, just like in SSX, as soon as you hit that tree or you tumble down the mountain or you're playing Tony Hawk and you fall off your skateboard, it's like all the momentum just stops in those games.
That's true.
And you have to go back and you start your tricks over again. You do your thing. And like, unfortunately, that's the problem with Mirror's Edge as well, is that like you'll be running. All of a sudden you'll like hit the wrong button combination or you won't hold the button long enough to do a high enough jump. And then you're like down in a pit and you just stop and you're like, oh. And you look around, you're like, well, where's the ladder? Because I don't know what to do anymore because I'm stuck.
Yeah.
I feel like there's going to be some stuff in the game later on to help you deal with that. But it was a hard thing to do in the beta, even for somebody like me who is familiar enough with the mechanics to at least remember how to navigate the environment. That being said, just like what you said, I am a big enough fan of this series, of this game, of the original game, that I will certainly go back and play Mirror's Edge Catalyst when it's finished. I hope that, you know, what they've done with EA Access in the past is that they'll put out these games for limited trial, maybe 5-10 hour trial, like they did with Dragon Age and Battlefront. And so if you're a EA Access member, then you should look for that beta. I'm certainly going to play it. I want to try it again. And I think that's pretty much it. That's Mirror's Edge. I'm still excited. I mean, I know I said a bunch of bad stuff, but
no, I mean, it's, you know, we can be critical.
Yeah. It did get pushed back at one point too. And I think that that's a good sign as well, right? Is that,
time's always good.
We've talked about this many times. We're sort of at the point where we don't need to have it right now. And if a game gets pushed back, that's probably a good thing because the more time that can be spent polishing the game, that's ultimately going to be great for the gamer. So,
yeah,
not absolutely. A bad thing. Still excited. And so, Kate is here. Kate is a Destiny player. You still play Destiny.
I do.
And there was a new, I think it was the 2.1 update?
Sure. I don't remember what the actual number was, but it was the mid-April update it's 2.2.
Oh, 2.2. So Ash and I stopped playing pretty much after the original raid because at that point we felt like, okay, we did it, you know, and like, that's it. So
of glass was, I think, it for us.
Yeah. So maybe tell us what's in this update and why or why not we should come back and start playing this game again.
Okay. Well,
I know, give you a hard task.
Begin. So this update introduced big changes to both PvE challenges and PvP stuff. For PvE, they added something called Challenge of Elders. Were you guys playing when Prison of Elders?
No.
Started? Okay. Yeah. So basically you go to a prison and you fight different monsters and then you get loot. So they introduced a harder mode called Challenge of the Elders and it switches up every week and it's a whole lot of fun. I don't know how to explain it really without you like having been there.
Yeah, no worries.
You gotta be there. Yeah.
Like basically you try to get 30,000 points over the course of 5 matches, and then you do that 3 times to get 90,000 points, and then if you do that, you fill out a special card, and you get loot from it, basically.
That sounds cool.
What has changed, and this is really old news, so I apologize to all the Destiny players playing. Didn't they change the mechanic of how the levels work? So it used to be tied directly to your gear with the light levels. Didn't they do something weird to the light levels like in the past 6 months?
What happened was that 40 became like the hard level cap, and then everything from there is based on light level, kind of, like you said.
Okay.
And your gear has a light level that contributes to your light level. They just raised the level to 335, so that's the new ceiling.
Oh, and boy.
Yeah, so the way you get your stuff up to 335, I mean, you can get really high drops, but they're not very common. They're more common than they used to be, but you infuse your items. So if you have, like, a gun that you really love, but it's low light level, and you got a shitty gun with a high light level, you can basically destroy the other one and transfer the light level to the gun you like.
Okay. Oh, that's cool.
Okay.
Yeah, so, and the way that used to work was crappy, but now it's just like a one-to-one switch, which is really fun.
That's cool. So what do you feel like they're trying to do with the game to either fix something that may have been broken before, or to, I don't know, maybe to now compete with the Division, which is available, I guess? Because I feel like when these types of games are getting patched, it's almost as if they're trying to address specific things, or they have different, you know, they have specific design intentions for how they want something to work in the game. Do you get a sense of anything like that happening with how the game is played now?
Yeah, I do. This update is really interesting in that it was all put together by the live team. So the people who are managing the live game did this, and not the people who are working on Destiny 2 or whatever future content might exist.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it kind of feels like, here's the next little trickle of content. Please don't leave. We promise there will be a game soon, later.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Interesting.
Yeah, so they brought back some strikes that people really liked, which are specific missions you go on to kill a big boss. They added a new strike, and they made generally the game more difficult, because for people who play regularly like me, it had become very easy.
Oh.
Yeah, there was less of a reason to log on, really.
Would it be difficult for, you know, like, lapsed players to come back into the game at this point? Like, would you think it would be too difficult? What would we do? Like, if Ash and I were to go back,
I think
now,
we're like level like 28.
Yeah, and we we haven't played since Vault of Glass, and we probably only beat it one time and got whatever we got from doing it. And that's kind of where we're at. We didn't do expansion 1, expansion 2. You know, the new expansion that came out after that. So
we didn't even, I haven't even gone back since Dinklage got replaced.
Yeah.
Oh man, you haven't heard the Nolan bot.
No, well, I haven't.
Yeah. I think it could still be a lot of fun, but I wouldn't do it alone, because you are going to be, way behind on story content, and it's kind of a slog to get through all the story content and all of the PvP stuff you need to do to get up to a current level.
But I mean, isn't that fun? Wouldn't that be, I mean, for me, I do enjoy story content. So was that story content any good, like the 3 expansions that have come out since?
Yeah. I'd say that the House of Wolves was a step in the right direction, and the Taken King was actually a lot of fun. For the first time, they really put to best use the sort of background characters that already exist in the game, but you don't get to see very often, like Cade, who is the hunter, Vanguard master. And he's very funny. He's played by Nathan Fillion. So he's a lot of like lines, stuff like that. He plays off a character called Eris Morn, who is, she's sort of like a space goth, and he's constantly making fun of her. And so it's really, it's a lot more fun than it used to be.
Oh, cool.
In terms of story content.
Cool.
Yeah, so if you had 2 friends who were also really far behind, I would say definitely go play through the rest of the game and then hop into PvP.
That sounds cool.
So you recommend?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I definitely recommend it. I mean, and it's got more of the general MMO stuff now. Like, you can buy emotes that let you do ridiculous dances or really condescending, like, bows to people that you kill during PvP.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
Yeah. Did they add
emotes are the new hotness right now?
They really are. Did they add microtransactions to the game? I feel like I read that somewhere.
They did. It's really limited. You can buy I think it's called silver. That might be the name of the currency.
Mm-hmm.
And silver allows you to buy emotes, basically.
Oh, okay. So it's like not a big deal. That's cool.
Yeah, it's not like you pay to win type of thing. You can't buy gear.
That's
good.
Gotcha.
That is good. It's like in Division now, where I have purchased all of the visual upgrade packs. Because I'm a sucker for that stuff.
And so you like, don't look like a snowboarder, but you still look like you're ready for the cold weather in New York.
Yeah.
Everybody looks very gray in the game, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. There's very few in Division, very few outfits that are very that stand out from the rest. And when you see them, you're like, holy cow, how'd you pull that off?
Yeah, that's a hard thing too, because you know, I see obviously Kate, I see your updates, and when you look at people's gear in Destiny, you know, like now you remember what that gear looks like. You look like some kind of crazy space wizard, or like you're a keyboard player in the band Yes or something.
Yeah.
and like all these other the dudes in the Division just look like they rolled off the couch and just threw something on and went outside and started fighting, you know?
It's really true.
Yeah, right. It's really unfortunate.
Yeah, it's like they're walking to the subway, like on the way to work.
Yeah, and like the thing that I'm kind of envious of in Destiny is that there's still that wow factor where you see somebody's gear and it's all like white and gold and like looks like they're going to the Met Gala and it's like, man, these guys are amazing. You know, like the stuff like that. I kind of miss that, right?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, too.
I love that. It's a lot of fun to see. Like you load into a match and I see another Warlock. I play Warlock most of the time and I'm like, what is that armor? I have to go figure out what it is and how to get it. It's a lot of fun. And all classes have very distinct styles. They did a really good job of drawing strong lines between each class. So they all play very differently and reward different play styles.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it worthwhile to create alternate characters if you want.
Cool.
So,
you're almost selling me.
Yeah. Did they add a third skill tree to each character too? I think we haven't played since then.
They did.
Okay.
So,
what does the Warlock have?
It's called Stormcaller. I want to say it's a lightning skill tree, and it basically lets you shoot lightning out of your fingertips and melt people.
Ooh, so Palpatine style. So
you float along. Yeah, exactly, Palpatine style. You float along and just like totally decimate a crowd of opposing.
Do you ever shout unlimited power? Do you do that when you play?
I can't say that I do.
Oh,
I'm sure someone
does. You need to get on that.
Yeah. The Titans got basically a giant fire hammer, which is so horrible. I mean, it's really great.
Yeah, silly Titans.
In that it works super well, but it's like so miserable because as soon as you hear the sound of someone like fire hammering it up, you know you're dead.
Yeah,
like,
it's one of those, huh?
Yeah. And then the Hunter one, which is my personal favorite because I just started leveling up a Hunter, is it's a void-based power and it's a bow.
And that's cool.
Yeah, you can.
I hated Hunter's like flaming gun. I thought that was terrible.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was so ruthless. So
the bow sounds cool, though.
Yeah, I like the void powers in general. That's what I use as a Warlock because I like lobbing that thing across the map. That was fun.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's the best.
That's my favorite, too.
Cool. Well, it sounds like you almost sold us.
Come back. Play with me.
We're on
only
Xbox.
If Battleborn and Overwatch weren't coming out like this week.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's true. Overwatch. Yeah.
It's a crowded time. Unfortunately, I would still load it up though. It sounds fun.
It's true. We already own it, so maybe.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, you already own the expansions. Oh my gosh, go play.
Yeah, I should at least do that for sure. Cool. Well, that sounds great.
Let's take a quick break and come back with our question of the week and get out of here.
Sounds good.
Woo!
Hey, this is Sissy Jones from Firewatch, and you're listening to the Rated NA Podcast.
All right, so we are here with our question of the week for episode 232, and we promptly and kind of sporadically asked you guys, what two franchises or IPs would you love to see crossover? Tell us. And the first answer is from Michael Coles. He says, Destiny and Dark Souls. I don't know why, outside the fact that I've played them all this week far too much.
That's as good a reason as any.
Yeah, I've actually never played a Dark Souls, but I played the shit out of Bloodborne, so...
Bloodborne was so good.
It was good. Are you going to pick up Dark Souls 3, Kate?
I'm thinking about it. I might do a Kate Streams Dark Souls thing where I start with Dark Souls 1.
Ooh.
Oh, nice.
Just sort of like stumble my way through the series.
You should really do that. You should really do that.
Because it'll be ridiculous. When I was playing Bloodborne, it was just me running around the map screaming.
Yeah, that's pretty basically was me too playing Bloodborne. But if you stream, tell me, and I'll host, and we'll do that whole thing.
Awesome. That'll be so fun.
Cool.
Next one comes from Darren Souter. At Darren Souter says, love to see a buddy cop movie with Samwise Gamgee and Samwell Tarly.
Wow, that went in a different direction. Huh?
Yeah, totally did. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So the next one is from Andrew Baker at abaker7. He says, Tomb Raider crossing into Uncharted. I think Lara Croft would take Nathan Drake to task adventure-wise. I totally agree.
Ah, that would be so good, wouldn't it?
So fun, yes.
They could yell at each other about who's stealing whose mechanics.
Oh, it'd be so good.
Uh-oh. You stole my game mechanics. No, I stole. Oh, that'd be great. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I'll put my answer in right here because it's kind of the same thing, is that I feel like, you know, the answer is video game crossovers, and we get flashes of it, right? But it's not enough, you know, and they're good, right? So you saw Tales from the Borderlands, which is a collaboration between Gearbox and Telltale Games, and that game was amazing. It was fantastic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then for a time there was some crossover between, you know, Dead Space and Mass Effect, and I think Dragon Age had like Mass Effect armor, or Dragon Age had Dead Space armor. Yeah. It was like one way or the other, right?
That was really cool for a while.
Had Dead Space armor, and Dragon Age had Mass Effect armor.
Yeah, yeah. So stuff like that is amazing. And like when I see stuff like that, I freak out. And I feel like if, you know, maybe two developers or two publishers, whatever, could just swallow their pride and kind of get together and do something, it could be really special. And that's what we see with Tales from the Borderlands. I would just love to see more stuff like that.
It'd be great. You know who's really embracing that is Rocket League. Rocket League has licensed cars from about, I think, like 10 different franchises right now.
Really?
There's like a Gears of War car. There's the Back to the Future car. It's like really, really cool.
I'm
look up all the special cars in Rocket League and you'll be surprised.
That sounds cool. I'm interested actually to try that game, but I was waiting for it to go on sale because I know it's mostly competitive.
Right.
It's not really my thing, but I feel like the concept seems interesting enough that I would be willing to try it.
Yeah, I've never heard one person say anything negative about Rocket League. Everyone that tries it's like, it's the most fun I've ever had.
You know what I think is sort of ironic about Rocket League as a game in general is, you know, there's like sort of like this subculture in gaming that, you know, likes to throw the sports ball card around as if like, you know, I don't understand or know anything about sports, and so I say sports ball because it's funny or whatever.
Yeah.
Now you have a game that is based on sports, right? And
right.
So by virtue of that, you now know something about sports. And so
that's very true.
You know, like I was wondering if there was actually an equivalent of the word sports ball, but for like, you know, for competitive games like League of Legends, like hero ball, you know,
yeah,
whatever you want to call it.
I know that like people call competitive shooters shootmans.
Oh, do they?
Shootmans?
Shootmans games.
That's what they should.
That's hilarious. I love that. Okay. So that was the tangent.
Uh-huh. Next one is from Chris Jenkins at Cloglip. He says, Titanfall and Macross, I want to be a giant ninja robot.
Please.
Oh, we get swords in the next Titanfall, so that's good.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Alyssa at Lissabit says, Moya from Farscape docs on Mass Effect Citadel. I would love to see what the council would think of John Crichton et al.
I've never seen Farscape.
Neither have I.
I just know it had puppets in it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I didn't. Stop me. That's crazy.
People that love Farscape really love Farscape. And I maybe that might be something I need to check out one of these days.
You might have some time.
I might have some time.
You might have some time coming up. Yeah.
A little bit of time.
Yeah, a little bit.
I'm going to say my answer. I'd like, I have a couple, but I'll just do one.
Sure.
I'd like to see Life is Strange and Twin Peaks do an actual crossover.
Oh my gosh.
Because it almost happens in Life is Strange. There's so many Twin Peaks references, and they just kind of hint at it over and over again that it's the same universe, or at least that the characters are aware of the show Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
And I just thought that that was just so cool. And I would love to see, you know, I would love to see Max pop up on Twin Peaks or something. Please. As this weird time traveling girl. You know, how cool would that be?
I'll tell you what, I think that, you know, Remedy and Don't Nod are two developers that could probably swallow enough of their pride to do, you know, like an Alan Wake Life is Strange crossover, you know?
Oh yeah.
That seems entirely feasible. I feel like those two studios could get together and kind of come to an agreement on what to do about that.
Man, what is Don't Nod working on now? I'm so intrigued.
I think they're making a game called Vampire.
Okay. Well, whatever it is, I'm buying it. I'm on, like, those guys are like, I love their stuff now.
Yeah.
You're on the train now.
Vampire is an action RPG is what it's called.
Did I ever show you guys what I got off Etsy from Life is Strange?
No. What'd you get?
I got a missing poster from Rachel Amber.
Oh, awesome.
Somebody did a piece of art that looked like a Rachel Amber missing poster from Life is Strange.
Oh, and man.
We have it up in the house now. It looks fucking awesome.
That game was so good. I want more of it. I'm sure they'll make a season two, but I think they said that they're going to do a season two, but it's going to be like a different story. You know,
gotta
like
bring back Hannah Tell, man. She was the best.
Oh, she was. But it won't be Max. It's like True Detective. I think it'll just be like a different story in general, but they could bring her back.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, to do another character or something, but I don't know how they could, because she's so distinctive and the performance is so powerful. But
that's
anyways,
true.
Yep.
Let's see. So Haggis McHaggis at Haggis McHaggis says, read or die / read or dream crossing over with the librarians would be an unbelievably joy-inducing, in my verse. I think read or die is a manga?
I don't know.
What do you know about the librarians? I've been hearing not a lot about the show, but I'm hearing enough to get me interested in the show.
I watched the pilot.
Yeah. Is Noah Wiley in that one?
He was in the pilot. I don't think he's in it. Well, there were movies about the librarians, and
okay.
He was the librarian. And, you know, he's basically a magic user that, like, works in this. I'm probably getting this wrong, but he works in a library and has all these cool magical artifacts in it. And the librarians is about a new team of librarians who also go on adventures and find mystical artifacts and solve mysteries and stuff like
that. Just from what you said, it sounds a lot like Warehouse
13.
There you go. That one.
It might be like that.
But maybe more.
I never watched Warehouse 13.
Maybe more fantasy than sci-fi, I guess. But I don't know.
Yeah.
Someone tweet at us and tell us about the librarians.
Yes, please. Let us know if we need to watch it.
Should I slip my answer in here?
Yes,
please
slip it
do.
In. Oh, slip it in, Kate.
You really did leave the door open for Ash. That was a wide berth. Yeah.
Hey, girl, slip it in.
God damn it, Ash.
such an underhanded throw to Ash.
I just lobbed that softball.
You really did. Yeah, totally.
So I was thinking The Witcher crossed over with Dishonored, but then I realized that's kind of Thief.
Oh, yeah. Oh. That's a good crossover, though.
But I love The Witcher, I love the world, and I really love the gameplay of Dishonored, and I'd love to see them have a be together.
That would be really cool, and I can actually see those characters coexisting in the same universe.
Right?
Yeah, I really
it totally
can.
Makes sense.
Good stuff. I agree. I agree with that crossover. Last one is Mr. Robert Framering, who says, how about Faith from Buffy and Dark Angel?
Dark Angel, yeah.
Yeah, Dark Angel. Oh my gosh, Jessica Alba. So Dark Angel and Buffy the Vampire Slayer crossover. That would be crazy. I remember not liking Dark Angel all that much, but that was like, I think, the 90s or the early 2000s.
I remember very little about it. It was James Cameron, right? That did that show, I think.
I know he directed a couple episodes, mm-hmm. though, which was crazy.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah, so we could probably sit and do this all day, but we're out of time.
Yeah, it was just sort of a fun question of the week. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to episode 232 of the Rated NA podcast. As always, you can follow us on Twitter, and that's at NerdAppropriate. You can give us all an email directly, and that is Ash, Matt, and Scott at NerdAppropriate.com or nerds@NerdAppropriate.com if you have a general question. We have a Twitch TV account, and that's / NerdAppropriate on Twitch TV. And Facebook/Nerdappropriate, YouTube/Nerdappropriate, Underpants/Nerdappropriate.
What? What's Underpants?
Just don't go there.
Don't go there? Okay. Well, maybe we should thank Kate for coming on to the show.
Kate, where can people find you?
They can find me on Twitter at Kate D and on the web at katedollarhide.com.
Everyone follow her. She's awesome.
She is super awesome.
Thank you guys tuning in for episode 232, and we will be back next week with an all-new show. I might be out, but
they'll You be might back. Be out. Maybe Kate will be here again. Kate, you want to come back in a week?
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Awesome. Oh, sweet. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Haven't done this in a while. In 5, 4, 3.